The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Hello.
Well, hello.
you are listening to We the People Radio. You have joined us again, either on a Sunday or a Monday. Sundays we air from noon to 2 on the West Coast here at KCNR 1460 AM. Mondays we are from 2 to 3. You can hear the first hour of the show in the Philadelphia, New Jersey area on WNJC through the Conservative Commandos Network. And we'll give you a little more intel on those guys in a minute. All that can be found on our website at wethepeopleradio.us. And I'm Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Bob Martin.
Bob's in charge of all the buttons, the music, that kind of stuff, just so we can have a division of blame here.
That's right.
We're supposed to do the breaks on time, and then Bob pushes all the buttons. That's our goal.
I push some buttons.
We have low
too.
Goals today.
I push the other buttons.
Oh, that's true, too.
Yeah.
So I've had some difficulty getting a hold of our guest today just because I dropped the ball last time. My computer got a little virus. It ate the email, and I thought we didn't have a guest. You guys had to hear a rerun. So sorry. But we finally got our act together, we meaning me. I've got to make sure the blame is correct. I could blame Bill.
Yeah, you could.
I could blame Bill.
You could, but don't. I'll
he was there
back.
When the email got, when my my computer got its virus. Anyway, our guest is Joe Gazzardi, the national media director for Californians for Population Stabilization. Easy for me to say.
Yeah.
CAPS. He's speaking out on the importance of limiting U.S. immigration through sensible federal policies. Imagine that. The word sensible, I'm sure, gets them in tons of trouble.
When you say federal and sensible.
Sensible, what are you thinking? As an immigration expert with 28 years of experience, he's been interviewed on national TV and radio programs, including NBC, CBS, Fox. He's got syndicated columns on immigration. They've appeared in hundreds of daily newspapers. And I was kind of surprised it appeared in the Huffington Post. I didn't think they were fans of immigration or sensible. Those both seem to be deal breakers to me, but I could be wrong. So how's it going, Joe?
Well, thanks very much for having me on. It's a pleasure to be with you and your listeners. And yes, I too was surprised when the Huffington Post started to put my material up on their website. But I guess that was a brief temporary effort on their part to try to be fair and balanced, because I submitted a few after that and they were no longer interested.
Oh, they got over you. They read the article all the way to the end and then they were all done.
Yeah, what in the world are we doing with this guy on our site? So, but we did have one brief shining moment, actually two or three brief shining moments with them.
Well, that's fun. So some information actually slipped out to the other side accidentally.
Yeah, and you know, we got some pretty positive comments from readers on that. So
I was going to ask you what the feedback was
really?
On that.
Really?
Yeah, there was some that was predictable from, I suppose, the hardcore Huffington Post readers, but there were also some positive remarks, and I think that's indicative of the fact that the immigration thing, as the years roll by, the immigration problem, as the years go on with the same old status quo, autopilot, million a year and so forth, it's become increasingly obvious to people that might even at one time have been in favor of legal immigration. They're saying, whoa, you know, take a look around and see what's going on. And they're a little more, I think, willing to at least listen to the other perspective.
Yeah, have the conversation about where this thing's going.
Yeah, right, exactly. I mean, you have things like the Pew Research report that came out just a few weeks ago predicting that immigration at its current level would add 88% of all of the population growth between now and 2050. People read that and they say, wow, you know, maybe it is time to take a look at developing a policy that would help Americans and not just steamroll them with federal policy that adds a million people every year, year after year, no matter what. You know, and mortgage meltdown, still get a million people. Recession, still get a million people. And a lot of individuals in the United States, when those immigrants are accepted, they get work permits and all kinds of federal entitlements. So when you're wondering why there might be so few jobs out there, you've definitely got to take into consideration that over the last 25 years, somewhere between 25 and 40 million immigrants have legally authorized immigrants have been added to the labor pool.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because we're not just talking about the illegal side of this equation, where we're just getting overrun with folks jumping the border and now wanting to be counted. I've read some of your articles, and you talk a lot about the abuse of the visa process and things like that as well.
Exactly. When I got started in immigration reform 30 years ago, all of the attention was, or most of the attention, was on illegal immigration. You know, how are we going to better control the border?
And I think that's where most people are. I think most people look at that and go, well, that's where we need to concentrate our efforts.
Yeah. Well, I believe that they are wrong. Where we need to concentrate our efforts now is on legal immigration, not only the million a year that come automatically, but also the 750,000 to a million or so non-immigrant visas that come into the United States every year also. And the abuse of those visas and the unwillingness of the government, the admitted unwillingness of the government to pursue visa overstayers or to monitor the visa applications, which are rife with fraud. I mean, basically, you're getting it from both barrels. You still got considerable illegal immigration, and you've got a whole lot of legal immigration that needs to be cut back immediately.
Why is it? Why do you think we don't hear much about the visa side of this equation? Because it is becoming a huge problem, not just with low-income jobs, but with some of the higher-income skilled jobs as well. Why aren't we hearing anything about this?
It's been that subject has been totally suppressed by the mainstream media until very recently, when, to everybody's shock and delight, the New York Times ran, I believe it was two, possibly three stories on the Disney scandal. And, you know, when the H-1B workers displaced American workers at Disney down in Florida, and the Americans were forced to train their replacements. So that story got a considerable amount of print in a very influential newspaper. The Los Angeles Times ran a story on the SoCal Edison, the Southern California Edison scandal, which was similar in nature. So it's starting to be to filter its way into the mainstream media. But again, I think only because it's just become so in your face that it's impossible to deny it anymore. You know,
well, when you start looking at
back,
they get like medical insurance and all that.
You know, people are sold a bill of goods. We really need these engineers from India and Pakistan and whatever. But now, you know, it's starting, the truth is finally starting to surface. I think next week there's going to be a big demonstration at Abbott Laboratories in Chicago.
Yeah, talk to us a little bit about the Abbott deal, because that's really a real good prime example of how this policy is being abused and American workers, what they're being subjected to as a result. I mean, these are folks that have good-paying jobs.
They went to school. They did
everything
the work.
Right. Now talk to us about what they're going through.
It's identical to the Disney case and to the Southern California Edison case in that these workers were advised that effective on a certain date, I guess the 22nd, the
day of
the demonstration. their jobs were going to be terminated, and if they want their, if they wanted to collect their severance, they were going to have to train their foreign H-1B visa replacement.
Yeah.
That's sweet.
So, that's awesome.
I mean, it's so craven and so awful.
That's humiliating.
That it's hard to get your mind around it. I mean, here are these American workers that have families, that have bills to pay, that have been hard-working Abbott employees. You know, they're not being fired for malfeasance or anything like that.
No, they've done their time. They put their
Abbott
time in. They put their time in, and they did everything they were supposed to do. They did a good job.
Well, and it isn't like it's because they're non-performing. It's because they can pay these other guys less. I mean,
Well, not just the pay either.
Abbott is a multi-billion-dollar company, so if anybody wants to take the time to do the math, I mean, the salary savings that they would get by replacing American workers with a H-1B visa worker for $20,000 a year less, it's insignificant. It wouldn't even impact the bottom line at all. So it's just really
talk to
awful.
Us about the tax implications as well.
Well, they don't have to pay the taxes on the H-1B visa salaries, the Social Security and things like that.
Ew.
And it's also got a bad consequence for the American workers who were productive and were earning good incomes, because all of a sudden they're not going to have those incomes. It's going to be very difficult for them to replace those jobs with equally well-paying ones. So they're not going to be paying into the federal taxes or state taxes or local taxes to the same degree, because they're not earning the amount of money that they were when they were working at Abbott. So it's a bad deal all around.
Yeah, and so supporting their home and all the things that require that level of salary won't be happening.
Yeah, and if you read any of the stories from the Disney scandal where one of the fired workers spoke out, I mean, he talked about the terrible sense of helplessness and loss of dignity when you get fired, and all of a sudden you just don't have any real good sense of self. It's beyond comprehension. Of course, this has been going on now since 1990. That's about when the H-1B visa came into existence.
We did have a guy come on the program. It's been a few years ago. I'll have to look for that. But he had quite a bit. He was an attorney out of Southern California, and he was watching this program sort of train wreck. We've got to take a really quick break. We're going to come back with... We've got Joe for the whole 2 hours, you know, since... Since we finally got coordinated on time.
There's no shortage of material, that's for sure.
Well, that's what we were thinking.
Go load up on your heart pressure medication, because you're going to need it.
All right, we'll be right back with you. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Working man, I wear a steel hard hat. I can ride rope, a hammer and paint, do things with my hands that most men can't. I can't get ahead no matter how hard I try. I'm getting really good at barely getting by.
Goes out to all the Disney people. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online at wethepeopleradio.us. We've got a ton of information there, and 5 or 6 years of archives. Some of them are on this topic. And we're speaking with Joe Gazzardi today, National Media Director for Californians for Population Stabilization, CAPS. And so before you think it's all about California, just in case some of these nutty things are only happening here, they're coming for you next. So,
oh, yeah.
Forewarned is forearmed. There's our relevance pitch for our folks on the East Coast who think, yeah, those idiots in California. Well, you know, some of these ideas tend to go across the country. What do you see on that front, Joe? Is this limited to any particular area, or is this just because?
No, unfortunately not. There's been indications all over the United States that these kinds of ideas that are hurtful for American workers and therefore hurtful to American communities are accelerating. Now, not too long ago, I wrote about New York State, which has decided that it thinks it's a great idea to let illegal immigrants teach in the public school system. And this is an idea that's been knocked around for a while. It's in effect in Denver. And what happens, unfortunately, is that Latino legislators in other states take a look and they say, oh, wow, look what they're doing in New York. Wouldn't that be great if we could get our illegal immigrant population involved in teaching American kids? And that's how it begins to spread.
How do they account for the lack of teaching credentials that,
well,
you know, American
that
workers
part
are supposed to have? I mean, do they have to have the same credentials to get to replace?
Well, they do have to have the same credentials, but the issue should be that, look, you're not, for whatever reason, you're not in the United States legally. You're not authorized to work, and you certainly should not be authorized to work as a teacher in a public school system where you are probably very likely to slip into teaching in Spanish, you know, that you're going to have, no matter where you are, you're probably going to have a large non-English-speaking population in your classroom. So an instructor slips into teaching in Spanish, possibly injects some political perspectives into his classrooms. It's just a horrible idea, but it's the kind of thing where people, again, these legislators say, oh, well, you know, these are good people, and they want to contribute, and they want to hold jobs, and blah, 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 and people buy into it. People buy into it. When the response should be, look, you are going to be able to teach in the public school system when you are legally authorized to be in the United States. Now, some of these people may have been deferred action recipients and have work permits through that program, but to me, that argues to the folly of a program like that, for President Obama to through an executive action say, look, we're going to grant temporary residency to hundreds of thousands of young adults, and we're going to give them work permits, then ending up in the workforce is a logical extension of that kind of a program.
It gets right back to the whole dreamers mentality. We just can't deny these folks once they're here. Is that?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah, it's crazy.
They're dreamers, and I mean, there have been incidents, I can't recall the specifics of them now, but there have been dreamers that have been arrested on capital charges. So you just can't make a statement that they're all here with the betterment of the United States in mind.
No, because we've done programs. I think the dad that we had on the program whose son was shot, Jamil.
Yeah.
Jamil Shaw. Yes. Yeah. That's a awful.
Yeah. Was that guy? Did that guy qualify for that program? One of these really egregious ones. The guy was one of the dreamers. So that could.
I'm not sure whether he
gotta go back and check
or not. I can't recall, but I've met Jamil several times when we're both back in Washington, D.C. for immigration-related events, and he's been, continues to be in the news while all of these arguments about what to do with illegal immigrants are playing out in the Capitol. But, again, you know, just imagine some illegal alien gangbanger shoots your son dead on the street when the kid is, what, a block away from his
house? Yeah, he was like three houses away.
Yeah. I mean, come on.
Yeah. So what pushback do you get for the most part? You're just a, you know, besides the usual, you're a bigot and a hater and blah, blah, blah. But what sort of legitimate arguments do you have to tackle on this particular?
Oh, legitimate arguments?
Yeah. I mean, people who mean well that aren't just, you know, ideologically blinded dopes.
Well, I mean, anybody who argues the opposite side, I don't think has a legitimate argument.
Because it starts off with illegal.
Hey, I was trying to be nice.
Yeah. I mean, the typical ones are, well, you know, we need to be more accepting and we need to be more tolerant and the United States...
Well, stop with the whole illegal thing, you know. I mean, that just labels everybody. It's,
we gloss over the illegal part and then all that.
Undocumented. I mean, it's not illegal.
Yeah, right. They're undocumented. And
yeah.
And it's really, little, I think...
A little detail.
It's hard for the other side to make an intellectual argument that against what the enforcement position is. I mean, it's hard to say, well... You know, we really should just let our borders be open, and we should just let people come and take jobs, and
it'll all even out.
All their kids in school and tap into the medical system, the hospital systems. I mean, it's just not an argument that can be intellectually defended. I mean, it can be to some degree emotionally defended, but when you get right down to the facts, and certainly. When you get down into the total numbers of people that we talked about in the first segment, or the costs involved in this kind of thing, that ends all arguments. You know, we did a study at Californians for Population on the cost of educating immigrants in California's K-12 system. At least, okay, emphasis on at least. $10 billion a year.
Wow.
There are 1.4 million non-English speakers in California's K-12 system. So what I did for the sake of the study was I kind of grouped them in three different categories of legal immigrants, illegal immigrants, and American citizen anchor babies. But... The common denominator for all three groups is that they are immigrants. So you've got that population of 1.4 million non-English speakers in the school system, assuming about $10,000 a year to educate each student. You've got 14 billion. So, you know, I rounded it down to 10 just to make it a little more, to give a little cushion to the figure, but that's where you are. And that's every year. That's every year.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. And double wow, now that we know that Jerry Brown's budget has been exposed as being, what is it, $175 billion in the red or something? And they were not, Sacramento was not counting the... deferred obligations on pensions and things like that, and they were, every year they were coming out with this supposed surplus, but now that the state accountants are demanding that they include those future liabilities, it looks like the budget is in a deficit to the tune of about, I forget what it is, but tens of billions of dollars.
Yeah, and yeah, it always was. It never was correct, because they've always done that. They've always thrown things out to make it look like, oh, look, we have this huge surplus, so now we can spend
more
money.
We can give more money away.
Yeah, we can finance this and we can finance this and that, and you know, we can take money away from this project. And well, didn't they just get? I think they're under investigation now for using federal funds to analyze the whole pipe, the giant tunnel thing he wants to build. He used a bunch of federal money to explore that, and I think that was highly illegal. But that's what they do.
Well, he used state money to explore fracking on his own ranch, so why stop, you know, why stop
well,
there?
That might be a good thing, because if he can do it on his own ranch, maybe we can do it in all of California.
Yeah, but that's, yeah. No, but see, that's bad if you do it there. It's only good if you do it on your own ranch where you're going to make the money, and that's only if nobody finds out about it. A lot of caveats. You got a lot of rules there.
Yeah.
So we need to take one more quick break.
What was I thinking?
I'm gonna slap Bill around during the break and see if I can get him thinking correctly.
I know it. I'm trying to get logical.
He's not got his government, his little government thinking cap on there. You are listening.
Jerry Brown.
I know. It only gets more special if you go to Oregon and you have the other Brown. You are listening to We the People Radio. Join us online. WeThePeopleRadio.us. We'll be back with Joe Gazzardi. We're going to talk about illegal immigration today. Still doesn't know Spanish. Now we all know. Oh, Bob.
Hey, all you dreamers in the front.
All together now. Just about the time we get all angry, there's a musical break. And then we're happy again. Welcome to the roller coaster ride that is We the People Radio. We are here with Joe Gazzardi. I can't say it without laughing because I keep hearing that song in my head. Ha.
Yeah, well, you'll get over it.
It'd be. So, you know, Joe, the cost of this is something that we talk about, but for some reason the other side never hears. Got any insight on why that is?
Simply because they refuse to acknowledge the reality of these kinds of things. I mean, the costs are one example, possibly the best example, but take a look at Jerry Brown's last campaign. He was dwelling on ending income inequality. Well, how exactly do you propose to end income inequality when you continue to invite extremely poor people who have very limited job skills, people who don't speak English, into California?
Well,
remember about a year and a half ago when the governor from Mexico visited, the president of Mexico, rather, and Brown said, well, we invite everybody from Mexico, whether they're documented or not, to come to California. And there was a lot of applause and you know, jubilation over that. But look, if you want to be serious about ending income inequality, the best place to start would be limiting immigration, without any question of a doubt about that.
So again, not inviting them all over here and then raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour, that's the wrong approach.
And giving them all
Have
driver's
they been lying
license,
to me again?
And giving them all driver's
all of that,
licenses
right.
where
driver's
they
licenses,
yeah.
Dream yeah. Act, college tuition, the Trust Act.
What's
all
that?
All of those things. That sends a very clear message, not only south of the border, but to nations around the world, to people who live around the world. Hey, California is the place to be. And that's just something that California cannot afford to do. You know, the State Department of Finance issued its projections for California's population by 2050, 50 million people. That's about 25% more people than we have now. So try to imagine those California highways and those schools and those hospitals with 25% more people trying to access them. That's going to be some kind of a nightmare.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that's a huge nightmare. And
well, that's another variable. You know, you were talking just a minute ago about why isn't cost ever factored in to the equation when people are analyzing immigration. But I would add to that population. I mean, obviously, population increases in direct proportion to the numbers of immigrants that come. And referring back to the Pew Hispanic or the Pew Research study of a few weeks ago, 88% of the nation's population growth between today and 2050 will come from immigrants and their descendants. Those are the exact words, the exact quote from that study. Your listeners can research it online. Just Google Pew Research Center Population Projections 2050.
And are they talking about immigrants who come here legally or illegally or the whole shoot and match?
Well, all immigration. So when you think of what the consequences are, of both fiscally and environmentally, and you think how relatively simple it would be to at least start to bring this under control, it's really mind-boggling that this administration and previous ones, you know, we can't forget that, have done so little. You know, bulk up the border, return to at least occasional internal enforcement. You know, when the ICE agents would go around and go to job sites, workplace enforcement. And most mystifying of all is the complete disinterest of Congress to pass mandatory E-Verify. That would be huge if they would just do that.
How big a, I guess two things. How quickly do you think it would change and how big of a change would it be? Just the E-Verify implementation.
I think a change would start relatively quickly. I think within a few months you would see people who come here with the idea in mind that they're going to be able to get a job. So I think that would start to take effect almost immediately. You would go to apply for a job and get that job, and then your employer would check the information that you've given him against the Social Security database to see if it matches, and if it doesn't match, then the employer knows that you are not either a citizen or a legal immigrant, and you're not qualified to hold that job. So you would be fired. And I think once a few people started to get fired, it would have an immediate effect. I don't know how much of an effect, but I would say that it would be a growing one, you know, just as if the federal government started to deport people. If there were actual incidents where people were deported, you would see a turnaround. Instead, nobody's deported.
No.
You know,
well, they always say that
aliens aren't deported. So the message gets out, hey, the United States doesn't enforce its immigration
sure.
laws. We got to go to the United States. If you want to take a really good specific example, I love bringing this up. You know all these maternity hotels, birth tourism, and all that stuff?
Oh, yeah.
If the United States were to send ICE agents to those places, and they have done it a couple of times, but arrest these women who have clearly violated the visa laws. They've lied on their visa applications. That is justification for immediate deportation. Okay, so detain these women. You could say to them, all right, you came to the United States to have an American citizen child. Looks like you're 7 months pregnant. You're going to have the child here, okay, but you're going to have it in a federal detention center. And then, as soon as the doctor says the woman is cleared to travel, the baby is cleared to travel, back they go. Do that a few times, and the birth tourism industry would end in no time.
How big is that?
Like, oh, huge.
Is it?
Huge. Yeah, huge. I mean, they're all over. They're all over California, and they're in New York. I think most of them are in California and New York. But again, you know, there were only one or two or three of them 15 years ago. Now there's hundreds of them.
And is that because they just don't enforce or you know, show up at those places and crack down? I mean, is that obviously the,
yeah,
that there's
that's
no...
that's exactly why.
Yeah,
there was
no
a raid in Southern California a couple of months ago, and I'm not sure what the ultimate consequences of that were. But, yes, I mean, all they would have to do, all the ICE agents would have to do is go into these places and say, show me your visa. And lying on a visa is a crime. So these visas say, well, I'm here to go to Disneyland. That's what? If you're here, you know, most people who come to Disneyland check in at the Marriott or the Hyatt or whatever it is,
right,
and they check in fairly close to Disneyland, and that's kind of the sequence of events. But these women are checking into things that are clearly set up to provide services for women in the advanced stages of pregnancy, and they have no real trappings of a legitimate hotel. So there's no question that there's lying going on.
I'm sure, because I guess I don't think I've ever seen a seven-month pregnant woman on Magic Mountain. I mean, doing the...
it's against the rules.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's all part
there.
Of the same awful system that... the same immigration free-fall that we've been in for all of the years of the Obama administration. We were talking a little bit ago about whether there's a growing awareness among all Americans of what a pounding we're taking on immigration. The New York Times, again, the New York Times, about a year ago did a story called The Fraud in Asylum Cases. And basically the Times said that asylum fraud is an industry. They were referring to Chinatown, the Chinatown section of New York. And they went on to say that something like 90% of these visa applications are fraudulent.
Wow.
You know, 90%.
Wow. And why are they not catching that at the time that they fill these visas out? Or
is it just
not,
they don't want to?
It's not against the law until they get the visa and break the rule?
Yeah, I mean, they'll say, well, I have credible fear of violence back home, or I'm in an abusive relationship with my spouse.
So you have to move to another country?
Well, exactly. Exactly.
Dang.
First of all, that's hearsay, right? You say, I'm in an abusive relationship with my spouse. Well, let's get your spouse into the room here and see what he has to say about it. But so it's hearsay, and certainly, Aaron, that's exactly the case. I mean, if you're in an abusive relationship, you don't have to move halfway across.
Yeah, got to move to America.
Well, isn't it true
it all starts from the top down, and that's it. You know, we've read stories that the Border Patrol say they have been told by their superiors not to detain illegal aliens.
But
catch
isn't
and release. Their superiors have been told by their superiors, who ultimately have been told by Obama, probably.
Right.
Hey, lay off.
Now, isn't it true that, you know, we all focus on...
leading
on,
witness.
No. we all focus on, you know, the illegal traffic coming across the border and people, you know, coming into the country that way. But isn't the vast majority of illegal aliens in this country, aren't the majority of them people that overstay visas, actually come in legally and then overstay?
Right, yes, yes. I don't know whether it's the majority or not, but it's probably at least half, you know. So it may well be the majority, but whatever it is, it's a significant percentage. And a few weeks ago, there was a hearing, Senate hearing, I think, and one of the senators asked this ICE director, Sarah Saldana, well, you know, what goes on with these visa overstayers? And she said, well, we don't know where they are. And so the same senator said, well, would it be correct to say that you don't know where they are because you're not looking for them? Well, yes. So, I mean, obviously, you know, if somebody is missing and you're not looking for them, that person would have to be very unlucky to be found out. And even if he were found, he most certainly would not be deported. He's not a priority.
Well,
he's not a priority in the Obama administration for deportation.
But they say that Obama's deported more people. You know, there's always that thing thrown out there. He's deported more people than anyone else.
Total lie.
Total lie. I mean, but I'd love to know how they arrive at that. Bob, do we have to take one more quick break? We do. Got to squeeze in one more break before the top of the hour. But when we come we come back, can you explain why that is a lie? And
of course.
Besides, I mean, what are they using to make it seem credible?
Well, they just have to say it.
I mean, that's what gets you. Just say it a lot.
Say it, and then it's true.
Say it a whole bunch.
Yeah. All right, we'll be back.
Oh, sure. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. That is not a lie.
When I get tired and a little lonely, the world's turned its cold back on me. But I'm about to swear, I ain't got a friend left to my name. Instead of sinking a little lower, I start making tracks on over to a place where the sun shines day and night, and where I know I'll hear you say, come on in, baby, take your coat off. Come on in, baby, take your coat off. Come on.
Please come to L.A. to live forever. California life alone is just too hard to feel. I live in a house that looks out over the ocean, and there's some stars that fell from the sky and living up on.
Oh, we can take perfectly good music and ruin it for you.
She just said no.
That was us.
Boy, won't you come home to me? And she said, hey, rambling boy, why don't you settle down?
Joe, what do we do with this kind of thing, honestly? Oops, better give him some sound. We got Joe on mute. Hey, Joe, what do you think? Oh, sorry, you're on mute. Oh, my gosh. So, we have folks have to hang with us through the news break for the second hour. What are we talking about, second hour?
We were talking about Obama as the deporter in chief.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that one already.
One of the great things about the commercial breaks from the guest's point of view is it gives me a couple of minutes to scramble around for just the right story, because when you read as many immigration stories as I do, it's kind of hard to keep them all straight. But in 2014, 2 years ago, Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson admitted that the department's deportation numbers are mostly illegal immigrants caught at the border.
Oh, really?
Now, there's a big difference between returns from the border and removals from the interior. A true deportation is a removal from the interior.
Those
so
are
what the
who
Obama
got
administration
border.
Was doing, and what Johnson admitted to, is they had added border returns to removals from the interior to get that very inflated number.
Yeah. So again, it's not a true
number.
It's a
lie. And, big surprise.
Yeah. We have to really dig a little deeper to get the true story. Joe, we'll be right back. We got to take a hard break. When we come back, let's dig into that a little bit further.
WeThePeopleRadio.us.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good afternoon. You are listening to We the People Radio. This is the second half of our program with Joe Gazzardi. He is the National Media Director for Californians for Population Stabilization, CAPS. Just in case you think it's only about California, it's not, because he's speaking out on the importance of limiting U.S. immigration through sensible federal policy. And just in case you missed the first hour, yes, we did make fun of the word sensible.
Yes. And we're not just talking about building a wall. In fact, I don't think we even mentioned building a wall.
Oh, now you've done it.
Yeah, yeah.
Now you've taken us there.
Nah, we've gone there.
Joe's got 28 years of experience, and he's been interviewed on all sorts of TV and radio. And he even briefly slipped into the Huffington Post and accidentally educated some naysayers. That's truly a claim to fame. We should have that at the beginning of the bio. Oh, my goodness. So first half of the show, you can find it at wethepeopleradio.us. We air from noon to 2 on Pacific time here on KCNR 1460 AM. We air from 2 to 3 Mondays on WNJC 1360 out of Philadelphia and Jersey Shore. So
that would be East Coast time.
That'd be East Coast time.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's tough because I even got tripped up with Joe. He said, "Are you on Eastern time?" I'm like, "No, we're on Pacific time."
Which one?
We could have.
Daylight savings time or the regular time?
I could have caused us to fumble the ball again.
Yeah.
All right.
Be glad we're not in Arizona.
It's fantastic to be with you guys and with your listeners and talking about these important issues. If you want to just continue where we were before the break on how the
absolutely
DHS fessed up to the misrepresentation of the deportation figures. Jay Johnson, the Homeland Security Secretary, admitted that the administration lumps together returns from the border with removals from the interior. So what were, of course, they're both important. You want to return, you want to apprehend those guys at the border and return them. The president has since advised Border Patrol agents that he wants to reinstate catch and release, so they're going to be released into the United States rather than being returned. But you also want those removals because that sends an important message to illegal immigrants who have entered into the general population and who are maybe employed, that hey, you know, we're aware, we're watching, and we are determined to secure the interior. And another interesting story came out in connection with Jay Johnson's confession, if you will. And the Los Angeles Times interviewed the former acting director of ICE. His name is John Sandwig, S-A-N-D-W-E-G. And he told the reporter that, in his professional opinion, illegal immigrants who get into the interior and basically mind their own business, you know, they're not criminals, they're not visible in any other way, just go about their daily affairs. Those people have what Sandwig called a 0% chance of being deported. Zero.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And this is from the ICE guy, okay? I mean, I think he had left his job by the time he made that statement. But you know, zero. So Obama's talking about removals and returns and so on and so forth, but in the ICE director's point of view, the typical, if you will, illegal immigrant in the interior has a 0% chance of being deported.
Well, if
there were a lot of people being deported, it would be headline news every single day of the week.
Yeah, true.
Oh, sure. But by their own admission, if they're saying that the majority of these folks are coming across the border, wouldn't that be ammo to reinforce our border to stop that flow? I mean, they don't think that way, or what?
I mean, of course it would. Look at the terrible influx of Central American so-called unaccompanied minors who actually were adults. Many of them were teenagers or adults, and very few of them were truly unaccompanied minors. But just look at that. And a story, I think the last couple of days or so, said that there's been something like a 1,200% increase in unaccompanied minors since 2010.
Wow.
Hmm.
Yeah, I mean...
So word isn't spreading or anything.
Exactly. I mean, everybody knows. I have relatives that live, I have sisters, actually, who live in Guatemala. And I'm in touch with them. And I'm always asking them, well, you know, what's going on down there in Guatemala? Is it really true that there's all of this violence and gang activity that's scaring people to death and forcing them to flee to the United States? And they say, well, what's going on is that if you're in a gang, if you're in the drug trade, then there is considerable amount of violence. But if you're like my sisters, going to the store, picking up the kids at school, that sort of thing, there's no violence whatsoever. So
it's no different than if you were in this country. I mean, if you are, yeah, if you're you know, in that gang community, you're going to be a victim of a gang crime.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And again, the huge role that hearsay plays in these cases. Somebody walks across the border, says, I'm a victim of gang violence, or I have credible fear of gang violence, is totally, totally hearsay.
Sure.
You cannot base an asylum policy or a refugee policy on hearsay.
That's a really good point.
How difficult, we talk about the visa process. How difficult is it for the average Mexican citizen to walk to our border crossings and say, I want a visa? I mean, is that a long, drawn-out process, or can they pretty much do it in a few hours and come on in?
Well, I think that, first of all, there's hundreds of Mexicans that come across the border every day for supposedly short-term purposes, take their kids to school in one of the border towns in Texas or Arizona, or go on shopping trips or things like that. But to apply for, you mean to apply for an actual an official non-immigrant visa?
Well, let's say a work visa. You want to come in, because I think a lot of them, that's what they apply for, is I want to come in and go to work. And it's good for X amount of time, and then they have to go back.
Right. So like an agricultural visa?
Yes.
I think that's probably something that's accessible over a relatively short period of time, because there are a lot of those ag visas that are given out. There's a tremendous lobbying in Congress from the agriculture industry and the tourism industry and other industries that benefit from the cheaper labor that foreign-born workers provide. So I think there's incentive to get those processed promptly.
Okay. Now, what about if you... let's say you live in Mexico, you're a Mexican citizen, you have relatives in the United States, you want to come visit. Are those pretty easy to get?
I think those are less easy to get, because the standard when reviewing a visa application is, well, what is the likelihood of this individual returning?
Right.
So you a guy wants a 90-day visa, say, to see his sister. So the fellow the consular officer who is analyzing that visa tries to determine whether or not there's a likelihood that at the end of those 90 days the individual will return. So if you have family ties, it's less likely that you will return.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the further away you get from the United States and make that application, the less likely it is to be approved. So if you're, for example, in the Philippines and you want to come visit your uncle, that visa is probably less likely to be approved than a person who's making that petition from Mexico.
Same, too, with folks that have jobs that are just here on vacation because they have a real job back at home. I'm sure that weighs in
but
quite a bit.
In general, in general, getting a visa to come to the United States is certainly much easier than it should be. You know, you get into these areas where you have a lot of lobbying for student visas, tourist visas, H-1B visas, H-2 visas.
There are a ton of kinds. How about this?
Yeah, let's take a break, and when we come back, let's talk about
school us on some of these.
Yeah, on some of these visas, because I know there's lots of different kinds, and they overstay all of them.
I know. Well, yeah, we need to find out what they're doing when they come here at the beginning.
Wouldn't we all like to know?
Yes.
Oh, drats.
All right, we'll be back.
Spoiler alert.
Okay.
We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People Radio. We're speaking with Joe Gazzardi from CAPS, Californians Against Population Stabilization. Sorry, I fumbled the ball there. They're for it.
They're not against it.
He's
right,
always
I'll
against.
School her on the break. Joe.
Oh, Phil's going to have to give me the rubber noodle.
Well, you filled up my head with so many lies. You twisted my heart till something snapped inside. I'd like to give it one more try, but my give a damn's busted.
By the county line, the cops are nipping on our heels. Pulled off the road and kicked it in four wheels. Shut off the lights and tore through a cornfield. What was I thinking? Out the other side, she was hollering faster. Took the dirt road, had the radio blasted. Hit the honky-tonk for a little close dancing. What was I thinking? Oh, I knew there'd be hell to pay. But that crossed my mind a little too late.
Is this the Escape from Jay Johnson?
Yeah, rip across.
You know, I used to like that song. Now it's all ruined.
So, Joe, we were talking about visas.
Yeah, but I got to first fix it.
Oh,
they're Californians for Population Stabilization. I had the CAPS thing in my head, and the A is always against. And anyway.
Now you got it.
All right, they're for Population Stabilization.
So when you
against.
Come to the American border. You apply for a visa.
No, you do it before you go to the border.
Oh, before you go to the border.
Yeah,
you don't just show up with a little handbag.
Bill's never been to the border, apparently.
Yeah. Well,
if you are ever in a conversation with somebody who keeps on referring to illegal immigrants as undocumented or anything like that, what I always say is, look, illegal immigrant comes to the United States with a valid visa and enters through an authorized, recognized port of entry. So that is the standard. But yes, visas, huge, huge, huge problem. We've been talking lately a lot about the student visa, the F visa, and that is something that has, like so many of these other visas, just escalated totally out of control. There are now nearly 1 million foreign-born students in United States universities and colleges. And what I like to point out for advocates for greater diversity in the U.S. college system is that, hey, these guys take a seat from an American student. No two ways about it. There's a fixed number of freshman seats every year. We're not building a whole bunch of brand new colleges. So you've got a fixed number of freshman seats. You've got extremely qualified American kids graduating from high school who are completely capable of matriculating at these universities. But the favoritism has been going, in many cases, to these overseas students for two reasons. First of all, they pay full tuition. So if you are, for example, an in-state student at Cal Berkeley, you're paying $14,000 or $15,000. If you're out of state, whether that's from China or from Minnesota, you're going to pay $35,000 or $40,000. Mm-hmm. So the universities opt for the international students because they're all hung up on this diversity thing, and they feel that they can advertise their universities as more diverse if they have a large population born outside of the United States. But 1 million people, you know, 1 million students, 300,000 of them from China. So, again, a sensible approach might say, well, you know, maybe it's not in our best interests to be educating Chinese youth at MIT or Caltech or other places.
And excluding our own students.
Right, and exactly, and exclude, and at the same time excluding our own students.
Well, just the transfer of technology. I mean, shoot, we have a jet flight center here in our town that trains exclusively Chinese students, and then they go back home and fly jets. Is that a smart move? I don't know.
Oh, I don't know about it. Is that part of a university or
no? It's a private thing with the flight school and the Chinese government.
Wow, that sounds scary. I mean,
you should
so
go.
How do those?
Yeah,
I've got to look into this. How do those guys get over here?
Well, they must have some kind of a school visa, but no, they have little jet uniforms, and yeah, there's a bunch.
Yeah.
They may
you're right. They may well come in on some kind of a F student visa. We know that a lot of those visas go to things like beauty schools and schools of I don't know what, you know, bogus schools basically. So, but that's interesting. That's right there in Reading?
Yes. Yes. Yep.
Well, anyway, that's a big scam. And then there's another visa. It's called the J visa. You may remember a couple of years ago. The J visa is the so-called cultural exchange visa. And a couple of years ago, out at the Hershey plant here in Pennsylvania, a bunch of these kids, you know, because basically they're young adults that come over from other countries, from overseas countries, to work in the United States on what's allegedly a cultural exchange program. So they pay big money to intermediaries to help place them in these places like Disney and Hershey and other sort of glamorous, if you will, corporations. Well, a couple of years ago, they went on strike because it turns out that the cultural exchange program was loading 50-pound crates of chocolate in the warehouse and working 75 hours a week. And after they had their salaries docked for room and board, making like $3.50 an hour.
Oh, wow. The Uh-oh. Old company store.
A little sweatshop going
on
there.
Yeah, the company store. So, again, the listeners can Google that, Hershey. Hershey is the biggest example of it, but there have been many others in smaller resorts and just different kinds of things where the kids are sold a bill of goods. Hey, it's really going to be great for you. You're going to go over to America. You're going to learn about American ways. You'll be able to transfer what you've learned into your resume and get a better job. And what it has turned out to be is this abusive practice promising one thing, but really delivering something that is completely a violation
of sure.
the J.
I mean, they
by the way, that, you know, Hillary Clinton promised to investigate that because the Hershey scandal broke while she was still Secretary of State, I think, and the Secretary of State offices oversee all of these visas.
Yeah, that's kind of a rotten deal because I mean they could stay home and work in a sweatshop, come all the way over here and work in a sweatshop. That's
what are you saying?
That's not good. Yeah, well, although I have been to Hershey, Pennsylvania, and it is a sweet smelling town.
It is.
The whole town smells like chocolate.
It does.
Yeah. Well, it's another example though of what we've been talking about throughout this hour and a half, which is that okay, look. You know, we know this is going on. We know this is really bad. We know that there's all kinds of abuses in the J and the F and the H-1B visas. But why doesn't anything ever happen? And, of course, that's going to be a pivotal issue in the election coming up.
Well, sure. Look at companies like Google and Facebook and companies like that. There's no benefit for them to really push the button on reform. I mean, they're
absolutely
they're
none.
Skinning a fat hog there, and that's where the money
you
is.
You know, Mark Zuckerberg has been almost omnipresent in Congress since he became such a high visibility guy,
mm-hmm.
and somebody emailed Facebook and said, "Can you point to any one single industry in Silicon Valley, any one single tech company that has a shortage, an identifiable shortage of engineers?" Because, you know, for the last couple of years, they've all been laying off people like crazy, Microsoft and Cisco and the rest of them.
Sure.
And that email never got a response. So, you know.
Because it's supposed to, they're supposed to bring these folks over if they can't fill them with people here.
Right, on hard-to-fill jobs. That's right. What the system was set up for, is if they're unable to find American workers.
Yeah.
But what it's turned into is, let's fire the American workers and hire
them.
They're
costing too much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a shame. It's a scam. And, yeah, somebody needs to do something about it.
The visa is, by definition, a temporary visa. It's a temporary non-immigrant visa. So you come, you do your thing, and you go home. But now it's become sort of a rolling program where it's not temporary. By the time these guys get their 6 years in, the visa is broken up into two parts. The first segment is 3 years, and then it's renewable for another three. Well, by the time you've been here 6 years, you can get yourself a good immigration lawyer, and you're probably not going to be going home.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could just overstay it and save yourself the cost of it.
Yeah, and nobody's going to chase you around, so don't worry about it.
Lawyer.
Hey, exactly. When we come back, let's talk about this U.S. versus Texas article that you had sent me this morning.
Oh, yeah, big day tomorrow.
I posted tomorrow. That, so maybe you can give folks a little heads up on that.
Yeah, we definitely want to get that in.
Sure.
Because we know we won't hear it on the media.
No,
not the whole story anyway.
Report it.
So you are listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back.
Thanks, Bob.
After another great song. Who knew immigration had so much good music?
I know. That's what it's about.
Someone knocking at the door. Somebody ringing a bell. Someone's knocking at the door. Somebody's ringing the bell. Do me a favor, open the door and let him in. Ooh, yeah. Someone's knocking at the door. Somebody's ringing the bell. Someone's knocking at the door. Somebody's ringing the bell. Do me a favor, open the door and let him in.
Fathers open their arms to the young searching foreigner. Come to live in the light of the beacon of liberty. Plains and open skies, billboards would advertise. Was it anything like that when you arrived?
No.
Dreamboats carried the future to the heart of America. People were waiting in line for a place by the river.
Watch me close.
It was a time when strangers were welcome here.
Yeah, before Mean Joe took over.
Music would play, they tell me the days were sweet.
Now we have a new sheriff in town.
It was a sweeter tune, and there was so much room that people could come from everywhere.
Yep, it's always been that. It was that way just until you showed up, right, Joe?
Yeah. Blame it all on me.
You're the big fun killer.
As many people do.
I just wanted to make sure we got that in there for the people who were thinking that. So talk to us about Texas.
Yeah, huge day tomorrow. U.S. versus Texas. Stakes are extremely high. The Supreme Court is going to hear the case about whether or not President Obama is on legal grounds with his deferred action for parents of U.S. citizens and legal residents, more commonly referred to as DAPA. And the court has, two lower courts have already ruled against the president, saying that he does not have the authority to issue work permits and other entitlements, Social Security benefits and income tax credits to nearly 5 million illegal immigrants. So what the administration is trying to do is to frame this as a case involving what the president's discretion is. That's the word that they like to use. Does he have the power to, through his discretionary decisions, give for nearly 5 million people amnesty? And Texas and others say, no, he clearly does not have that, that the power of writing immigration laws is with Congress, not with the executive branch, but with Congress. So the Justice Department is trying to make the case that, hey, you know, the president is within his authority to grant this amnesty, even though when the lower courts sided with Texas, they said, well, maybe he has discretion over who he deports and who he doesn't deport, but he clearly does not have the authority to grant benefits.
Well, so how is that any different than what Reagan did?
The difference is 5 million people, you know. I mean, Reagan's amnesty was for a small handful of people by comparison. So five million people getting work permits and entitlements and at least temporary legal status is huge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and well, with this, he's also spending, you pointed out in your article, spending taxpayer dollars. I mean, he's literally just wielded his pen and his phone and said, okay, you people are going to pay for this.
Exactly. Exactly right. I mean, this is all unprecedented in American history. Never at any time has a president moved so far to the left on immigration laws. And, you know, in some ways you've got to say, well, maybe if Americans had a stronger Congress, you know, it wouldn't have come to this. I mean, when I look at the whole Obama record on immigration, I say, well, why wasn't there more congressional objection to DAPA's forerunner, deferred action for childhood arrivals? I mean, that went, there was no significant congressional objection to that whatsoever. So,
and what year was that?
About, pardon me?
When was that? What year was that?
2011.
Okay.
2011. So, you know, no objection to that whatsoever, not even token objection. It wasn't like, you know, the House was under John Boehner's direction. So where was the pushback on that? I think if there had been pushback, we never would have gotten to where we are today with DAPA. DAPA is just a stronger version, more all-encompassing version of what the president got away with DACA.
Yeah, just a little bite. Well, heck, if that works, let's take a big bite this time.
Well, on this one, both the House and the Senate have filed briefs and basically against the president's position.
Yes, they have. And you'll remember also that at the end of last year, or before the midterm elections, I can't remember exactly what the timing was, but Congress was saying, well, we'll get, you know, as soon as the new Congress gets voted, takes office, we'll have control of the House, we'll have control of the Senate, and we'll make a push against the amnesty then. But that never happened, you know. That never happened.
If the president's never going to
defund, remember they were going to, were under advocacy groups like CAPS and others said, well, look, why don't you just defund the amnesty now while you're contemplating the budget? And they said, well, it'll be better, you know, once we're in office and we have the power of that we get when we control both chambers. But it never happened.
Yeah, you still can't get the president to sign it. So at some point, you got to tie it to something that he wants.
There
and,
has been, I would say, up until very recently, there has been virtually no vigorous objection to any immigration outrage that the president has put into place, whether you're talking about ordering the Border Patrol agents to maintain catch and release, or whether you're talking about DACA or DAPA or any of those kinds of things. No significant objections from the Republican-controlled Congress, which has been a big contributing factor to the presidential race that we're seeing today.
Yeah. Well, it's worked really well to say that anybody who opposes like your bio says, sensible immigration reform. Anybody who opposes anything that has anything to do with immigration makes them a hater. So it's done a really good job of silencing people.
An increasingly hard argument to sell. I like to ask people, you know, look, tell me in what way this benefits you or your family. In what way does it benefit your personal circumstance to have millions of illegal immigrants coming to the United States and getting work permits, thousands of refugees from terrorist-sponsoring nations coming to the United States, not only getting work permits, but if you go on to the U.S. CIS website, it describes what else they get. They get job training. They get job placement services. We're talking about the refugees now. Job training, job placement services, English language classes. Okay, well, I don't really see how that helps me or my family in any way whatsoever.
And
if anybody can defend that policy to me without using the words "you're a racist" or "you're a xenophobe" or anything like that, I would love to hear it.
What do you say to the folks that claim they're only getting the jobs that we don't want to do?
Yes.
I hear that a lot.
That is a biggie.
Yeah, well, that has been debunked many, many times. The Center for Immigration Studies did a comprehensive study of all of the professions that the Bureau of Labor Statistics lists, and they found that it was only in agriculture where there was a need for foreign labor. All of the other job positions have plenty of available work for them, and not long ago I wrote about an amazing case in Chicago where Eli's Cheesecake, a renowned cheesecake baking company, and went and has hired several refugees to work in their cheesecake factories. Now, you just can't tell me that in Chicago, with all of its problems and with all of its disaffected youth, that you couldn't find American citizens to bake cheesecake. I think that initially the job pays, $10 or $12. And I went onto the website, and according to Eli's website, there are opportunities to move up into management and regional management and, you know, potentially make $65,000 or $75,000 a year. So
You're going wrong, Joe. You can't.
Counterproductive and hurtful to keep giving those kinds of jobs away.
Yeah, but you can't hire people for $10 an hour when there's jobs available that pay 30. They should start at 30. Come on, that's why we're raising the minimum wage in California. Every job has to be a livable wage.
How that plays out.
Yeah.
One of the news channels was interviewing a McDonald's franchise holder, and he said the minute that takes effect, he will have no choice but to cut staff. And that's...
Yeah, they'll have those little self-order kiosks that they have all over the place.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what the guy said.
Yeah.
He said that's what it's going to be. You're going to go into those places, and you're going to have an iPad, and you're going to have some robot back there.
Yeah.
Making
well, it's happened in every other industry. I mean, when the labor gets too much, they invent a way to do it mechanically, yeah.
And you know, that's
there's
a McDonald's,
fewer jobs.
Which I'm going to assume has a relatively high volume business. But what about the few remaining mom and pop stores?
They're doomed.
Barely hanging on.
They're doomed. So, we want them to pay for everything under the sun, and now everybody's got to be paid like they're a college graduate. We need to take one more quick break. Hey, when we come back, talk to us about Jackie Robinson Day.
Oh, yeah, okay, great, my favorite subject.
Yeah, Jackie Robinson Day was April 15th. And just to close out this segment, the Texas case is heard on Monday, April 18th. So in case
tomorrow.
You're listening to this at a different time, the word tomorrow might not be of assistance to you. So tomorrow in our world right now is April 18th. All righty, we're going to come right back. We're with Joe Gazzardi. We're talking about immigration for the past couple hours. You can find the whole show in archive form on wethepeopleradio.us.
Man. Hey, I'm a Cancer with a bad moon rising.
Look here, Elfago, watch my lips. Where were you born?
I was born in East LA, man. I was born in East LA.
Oh, yeah, you're born in East LA. Well, let's see your green card, huh?
Green card? I'm from East LA.
All right, well, then who's president of the United States?
Oh, that's easy, man. That guy that used to be on Death Valley days, John Wayne.
All right, let's go. Come on.
Next thing I know, I'm in a foreign land. People talking so fast.
Good old Cheech and Chong.
I think we've hit the entire range. Bob, you get an award today.
Yeah.
You get an award. Best music ever.
Yep, pulled out all the stops.
Oh, my goodness.
Thank you.
All right, so... Joe, immigration's even going to mess up Jackie Robinson Day. It even gets into Major League Baseball.
Tough to go to a baseball game these days. So, Aaron, just really briefly before we get into Jackie Robinson,
yeah.
Bill, I think I may have misunderstood your question about what the difference was between what Obama's doing and Reagan's amnesty. Reagan's amnesty was passed by the House and the Senate and got to his desk in the proper fashion, which is to say it was congressionally approved legislation. Congress has not had any say in Obama's executive action. So that's a huge difference.
Yeah, that's a big difference. And that's the way it should have been done.
Exactly.
Since we actually have three branches of government.
you know, those of your listeners that have been going to baseball games regularly over the years have noticed that all of a sudden about 30 or so percent of the players on the field are from overseas, mostly the Dominican Republic, but also from Asian countries. And on Jackie Robinson Day, Major League Baseball makes a big, big, big deal out of why there aren't more blacks in baseball. A lot of hand-wringing. So that is a very easy question to answer. There aren't more blacks in baseball because the Major League owners and executives aren't pursuing blacks. What they have done instead is open these baseball training camps in the Dominican Republic. 29 of the 30 baseball teams have camps in the Dominican Republic. They identify young prospects. They train them. They give them housing. They supplement their, give them food allowances and so forth. And there are no similar camps in the United States. I mean, it's so easily explained, but outrageously explained. All of the investment into baseball has gone into these camps in the Dominican Republic. If I were in Major League Baseball and I were really serious about wanting to add African Americans to the game, I would have camps in Kansas City, St. Louis, Chicago, L.A., you know, where the black players are, but they don't. And one of the additional lures for the Dominican players especially is the owners say, hey, look, we're gonna train you and do all of these things for you, but we're also going to give you a visa. We've been talking about visas for 2 hours, but a newly created visa, no less, the P for professional, that came into being in the Bush administration. Bush, you may remember, was a part owner of the Texas Rangers baseball team in Arlington, Texas.
Oh, yeah.
He was really chummy with the owners, and the owners came to him and said, George, you know, we can't get enough players up here. So they created a bill. They had a voice vote in Congress, and here we are today. Hmm. Now, just imagine, the listeners, just imagine whatever your profession is, whether you're a doctor, a lawyer, a teacher, a pharmacist, an accountant, and one day you pick up the paper and the headline reads, unlimited number of accountants will be getting visas starting next year. Would have a pretty damaging effect on your ability to get a job or keep a job.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
That's what's going on in Major League Baseball. I mean, a lot of people think, well, these are just more talented players and the scouting skills have gotten much better. And without a question of a doubt, they are talented players. That's not at issue. What is at issue is that there are equally talented players graduating every year from Fresno State and UCLA and Stanford, and they're shut out of the process.
Is that primarily because they can hire these players from other countries for less money?
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah. I mean, you go down to the Dominican Republic and you offer some kid $25,000. I mean, that's going to be more money.
That's a year's salary.
Ever expected to see in his lifetime.
Sure.
And then you say, oh, yeah, and we'll get you into the United States legally on a P visa.
Yeah, get another way in.
Jeez. Yeah.
Well, Joe, we have, believe it or not, run out of time.
Oh, too bad. I could talk for so much longer on that.
We're going to have you back because this thing is really heating up. And I think as we get closer to the elections, maybe we'll have you back.
I hope you do call. It's been a lot of fun to be with you both.
Super fun. So we've been chatting with Joe Cazzardi from CAPS, Californians for Population Stabilization. You can find them at capsweb.org. And everything is on the website for you, wethepeopleradio.us. Thanks, Joe. Thanks, Bob.
Thanks for listening, everybody.